Another petition questioning the eligibility of the late dictator's son, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., to run for president, filed before the Philippines' poll body. Meanwhile, the party backing Senator Bongo for president holds an emergency meeting in a last-ditch effort to convince him not to withdraw from the race. We'll talk to PDDS Executive Director Glenn Badon about that meeting. The U.S., South Korea, and Middle East report their first cases of the COVID-19 Omicron variant. And 28 schools in Metro Manila set to join the pilot testing of face-to-face classes next week. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Topping your noontime news fix, Davao City Mayor and Vice Presidential Candidate Sara Duterte Carpio sees a further consolidation of support after Senator Bongo dropped out of the 2022 race. She said since launching her vice presidential bid, she's been calling for unity among the supporters of her father's administration. She believes this would be more possible now with Go out of the picture. Go is President Duterte's preferred successor, but he dropped out of the presidential race earlier this week, leaving the administration without a candidate in next year's polls. A seventh petition against the presidential bid of the late dictator's son, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., has been filed before the Commission on Elections. Meanwhile, supporters of Senator Bongo continue to urge him to reconsider his decision to withdraw from the presidential race. Our very own Ina Reformina now joins us with details. Ina, go ahead.
Yes, KC, a sixth case has been lodged against presidential aspirant Ferdinand Bongo Marcos, which aims to block his candidacy in the upcoming May 2022 national elections. Led by Akbayan Citizens Action Party, former Philippine Commission on Human Rights Chairperson Eta Rosales, petitioners filed a petition for disqualification against Marcos before the Philippine Election Commission, asserting he is perpetually disqualified from holding public office by virtue of his tax-based conviction involving taxable years 1982 up to 1985. The petition cited Presidential Decree Number 1994, issued by Marcos's father, the late strongman Ferdinand Marcos Sr., which amended the 1977 tax code by inserting a provision for perpetual disqualification from public office for violators who are public officials. Now, PD 1994 took effect in January 1986. The petition explained, though Marcos's alleged non-payment and non-filing of income taxes was up to 1985 only, or a year before the perpetual disqualification penalty took effect, filing of ITRs and payment of taxes for 1985 was due on April 15, 1986, which means from January 1, 1986, up to at least April 16, 1986, Marcos was still committing the crime of non-filing of tax returns while he was sitting in Ilocos Norte governor. The petition further argued at the time the tax conviction was made final by the Supreme Court on August 31, 2001, Marcos was again governor of Ilocos Norte. And again, his final conviction carried with it the penalty of perpetual disqualification from holding any public office. Now, by the way, this penalty under the tax code also includes perpetual disqualification from voting and participating in an election. Petitioners also cited a Supreme Court ruling in the case of convicted child rapist Romeo Halustos, where the SC said the COMELEC is, and I quote, duty-bound to enforce and administer all laws and regulations relative to the conduct of an election, end of quote. The SC ruling further stated, I quote, to allow the COMELEC to wait for a person to highlight the anomaly that these cases so grotesquely exemplify. The SC underscored KC the fact that despite his perpetual disqualification, Palacios still got elected and served twice as mayor. Now, finally, the petition against Marcos asserted he was convicted on a crime involving moral turpitude, as it highlighted that taxes are the lifeblood of the nation. This is the sixth petition against Marcos's presidential bid and the second disqualification petition against him. To recap, there are two DQ petitions against Marcos, three for cancellation of his certificate of candidacy, and a sixth one urging the COMELEC to declare him a nuisance candidate. Casey, any moment now, a seventh petition against Marcos will be filed here at the COMELEC, this time to be filed by his own party, the Partido Federal ng Pilipinas, represented by its chairman, retired General Abubakar Mangilin, and original party officers. That's what the petitioners assert. In a media advisory, the party called Marcos has filed Certificate of Nomination and Acceptance, or CONA, as irregular, anomalous, and an injustice to party officers. The advisory alleged the issuance of CONA to Marcos was unauthorized, unilateral, illegal, and improper. I'll be giving details on this story when they come in. These are our latest election updates. Ina Reformina, ABS-CBN News.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Ina. Ina Reformina there, joining us on the line, telling us more about how a seventh petition against the presidential bid of Ferdinand Marcos Jr. is impending, and it's actually going to come from his very own party, Partido ng Federal Pilipinas, claiming, as Ina said, that when he filed his CONA, it was unilateral in nature. We're going to get more details regarding that in our succeeding newscast. In the meantime, back here in the newsroom, how confident is the PDDS party that they can convince Senator Bongo to stay in the presidential race? Joining us now is their executive director, Glenn Badon. Mr. Badon, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Yes, ma'am. Good afternoon. First of all, I'm very sorry about the noise going around because I'm here at the COMELEC building, beside COMELEC building, because we are waiting for our presidential candidate, Senator Bongo, to come. If it's, in case he's going to file his withdrawal, then we're now waiting here just to stop him, not to continue his withdrawal or here in the COMELEC office.
And how do you intend to stop him from filing his withdrawal? You will prevent him from going into the office?
Yes, ma'am. We'll try to, we're making a barricade for him not to continue getting inside the COMELEC building. We will talk to him.
You will talk to him. Oh, tell us more about what happened in the emergency meeting that happened last night.
During the emergency meeting last night, we were able to have a party decision that will consult, after consulting all our officers and members. That's why we're coming here to make our stand and make our appeal to Senator Bongo to continue his running for the presidency.
But when you listen to him in several interviews, even after his announcement, it seems that his decision is final. What do you think will make him change his mind and follow your lead?
First of all, we respect his decision, but as a party, we all understand that we are ready to make him win for this campaign, because all the people that is involved or members of the party are all the members now who were with him during the even during the time of President Duterte, and we are also there during the time when he runs for senator.
But even if he changes his mind, Mr. Badon, why would that be acceptable to you, to have a standard bearer who is a flip-flopping standard bearer and whose heart really isn't in it?
Yeah, well, you know, ma'am, we understand his decision because of some emotional problem. We all understand that. But as a party, we have our own obligation to make a stand also, because he is represented by the people. So the people meets our stand, and we want him to hear our stand, that we really believe that he is the right person who can continue the good things that they are doing with President Duterte. And we also believe that he has the capability to do it, to lead the country. That's why we have trust and confidence in him.
But it looks like the confidence is lacking within himself.
Well, ma'am, we, as I've said, we'll understand, but we will help him. We will help him to be courageous and make a courageous stand, because we are ready to be always at his back.
But if it is happening right now, even before the elections, that confidence is lacking, and then, as you said, the courage is not there, what more if he becomes the leader of the land, Mr. Badon?
Ma'am, we are about to talk to him about that, and we didn't hear yet that it's, as a matter of fact, he didn't have his resignation if already being received by the community. So that's why we're still hopeful, and we're confident that he will consider his mind.
If he doesn't change his mind, who will you support?
First of all, we will respect his decision. And whoever will be the decision of the party, who would be the standard bearer, who understand the principle and the advocacy of the party, then the party will decide.
Is Marcos Jr. outside of the options that you're looking at right now, given the fact that the president himself had said that he will never support Ferdinand Marcos Jr.'s run for the presidency?
We don't have consideration, ma'am, for who would be. It would be, but still we're talking with our party members and officers, because we are going to make a party stand for that.
But you must have options as we speak. Who are your options?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. We will make a collective decision for that. As of now, not yet.
But what options are you looking at here? Who among the candidates are you willing to support?
What we're looking for a candidate is for those who will have the same advocacy and who have the same character and principle for good governance of what our party stands for.
Mm. If, for example, one of their options is Bongbong Marcos, how will that affect the party now, considering that, you know, you look to President Duterte for guidance, and yet he has already said that he's not going to be supportive of Marcos's run? Would you still consider him, given the fact that the president had said that in the not-so-distant past?
As of the moment, ma'am, we have to talk with the president, and we have to talk to Senator Bongbong, and we'll confirm with the party, and we will decide.
The mayor of Davao City, Sara Duterte Carpio, said that she has been calling for unity among the supporters of her father's administration. She also believes that this is now going to be more possible because of the withdrawal of Senator Bongo. Do you think that's going to happen, that this is enough for you to sort of fold into the support system of the BBM Sara Duterte Carpio tandem?
We support Sara Duterte as our vice president. And again, we will reiterate our stance that our president, candidate Senator Bongo, did not yet file his withdrawal. So we are still very hopeful. We are confident that he will change his mind.
What's keeping you from declaring it or saying it outright that you are supportive or not supportive of Marcos Jr.?
We stand on our party's principle, ma'am.
Sorry, I didn't get you.
We stand on our party's principle.
Yeah, but why are you being, I would say, coy about it, that you're not exactly committing yourself to the BBM tandem, just your support for Sara Duterte Carpio?
Because, ma'am, as of the moment, we're still for Senator Bongo as our president.
How much time are you going to give him?
As long as he will not file. As long as he will not file his withdrawal, then we'll still be here asking and waiting for him to consider his decision.
Mm. What about his appeal? Yesterday he said it again. Don't count on him. If he's going to go to the COMELEC, he's going to do it just by himself. It's not going to be, you know, a huge fanfare. What is it that makes you, you know, not listen to whatever it is that he's saying? Is that sort of because you being in denial that he has made his decision?
No, ma'am, we will respect his decision. But again, as a party, we believe that he is the one who is capable to run. That's why we're still keeping our chance. We're still doing our responsibility as party to show to Senator Bongo that we can do it in this election. That's why we are gathering all our officers and all the supporters of Senator Bongo. We're coming together now, starting to regroup, and we're talking what would be the possible movements we're going to do in succeeding days, just to show the senator that we are still here and we are strong to make him win this election.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. Glenn Badon there, the executive director of PDDS, that's Federalismo ng Dugong Dakilang Samahan. We appreciate you joining us this afternoon. Take care. Keep safe.
Thank you, ma'am. God bless po. Maraming salamat.
Salamat din po. And back here in the newsroom, Aksyon Demokratiko defends handing out some 10,000 pesos worth of prizes during their event in Nueva Ecija. Its standard bearer, Manila Mayor Francisco Isko Moreno Dumagoso, meanwhile unveils plans for the agriculture sector should he win. ABS-CBN's Katrina Domingo on the line now to tell us more about that. Kat, go ahead.
Carmina, about 20 participants who were able to answer trivia questions about the party standard bearer and Manila Mayor Isko Moreno Dumagoso, as well as other vets of Aksyon Demokratiko, were rewarded with 500 pesos each in a gathering in San Isidro, Nueva Ecija last night. But the party was quick to clarify that this is not vote buying. Aksyon Demokratiko senatorial aspirant Carl Balita tells us that it was just a sort of reward for those who participated in games, and added that the game itself was a last-minute kind of thing to stretch the program last night, as Magoso arrived about 2 hours late at that particular hearing. Sources told us that Dumagoso had a meeting with local officials who would potentially endorse their slate in the 2023 national elections. That is why he had to come at a later time of the program. Now, Aksyon Demokratiko senatorial vet Samira Gutok says that this is the first time they had a game during a sortie in some of the provinces they have visited throughout the country. She says that while this might be a deviant activity, it brought the audience to wait until the evening. Now, another senatorial aspirant from Aksyon Demokratiko, Jopet Pison, underscores that no election rules or laws were violated since the official campaign period has yet to begin at the moment. Carmina, meantime, aside from this development, Dumagoso also while going around Nueva Ecija yesterday, underscored to farmers in the Central Luzon province that he would be prioritizing anti-smuggling campaigns should he win the presidency next year. He says that smuggling needs to be curbed for the local farming industry to flourish so that vegetables can become more affordable. As we recall, Dumagoso is also pushing for a shift in the way Filipinos consume rice. He wants to lessen the country's consumption of the staple grain to reduce risks for diabetes, and also to manage the demand of the staple grain here in the Philippines. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Katrina Domingo there joining us on the line. Take care, Kat. Keep safe. Moving on, an election lawyer slams Google Philippines' decision to close its platform for election-related advertisements. Attorney Emil Marañon calls it an elitist move. He points out the internet is the cheapest advertising platform. He says the tech giant's new policy may only favor rich candidates.
If ibaban mo sila lahat sa social media, then the others can still afford to go TV or radio, and we all know naman na mas malawak naman yung reach ng TV and radio compared mo sa internet. So mas lugi naman sila. That's the only platform that they can afford, and if ibaban mo pa doon, so saan sila pupunta ngayon? Diba? Tapos meron ding restrictions sa in-person campaigning because you still have to get a permit from COMELEC. Mas lumiliit yung puwang or space for campaigning ng mga taong hindi makaka-afford ng TV and radio.
And A communication expert believes politicians will still find a way to reach out to voters online despite Google's decision to ban election-related ads. Professor Cheryl Soriano of the De La Salle University also stresses how challenging it can be to filter this out on social media, especially with so-called microvloggers in the picture.
Although there are political ads banned on social media platforms like YouTube, for example, well, there remain a lot of politically charged messages that circulate and are continually gaining traction on the platform that are not specifically from the political actor source. Okay. There are a lot of micro-celebrities on YouTube, as well as other platforms that amass something like 100,000 subscribers to over 500,000 subscribers who are able to seed political messages or their commentaries or their political opinion, construct the character of political candidates, frame issues in particular ways that can privilege candidates.
We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, the Omicron variant reaches more countries, including the U.S. and South Korea. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. And we're back here, still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Another petition questioning the eligibility of the late dictator's son, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., to run for president, filed before the Philippines' poll body. Meanwhile, the party backing Senator Bongo for president holds an emergency meeting in a last-ditch effort to convince him not to withdraw from the race. The U.S., South Korea, and Middle East report their first cases of the COVID-19 Omicron variant. And 28 schools in Metro Manila set to join the pilot testing of face-to-face classes next week. The U.S. has detected its first case of the Omicron variant. Let's get the details in this report.
So this is the first confirmed case of COVID-19 caused by the Omicron variant detected in the United States.
The first known U.S. Omicron case has been found in California, U.S. health officials announced on Wednesday. The patient, who was fully vaccinated but did not have a booster shot, has mild symptoms, according to Dr. Anthony Fauci, the top U.S. infectious disease official who briefed reporters at the White House.
The individual was a traveler who returned from South Africa on November the 22nd and tested positive on November the 29th. The individual is self-quarantining, and all close contacts have been contacted, and all close contacts thus far have tested negative.
For days, U.S. health officials have warned that the new variant, first detected in southern Africa and announced on November 25th, was likely already in the United States, as dozens of other countries also detected its presence.
The profile of the molecular profile of the kinds of mutations that you see would suggest, A, that it might be more transmissible and that it might elude some of the protection of vaccines. But we don't know that now. We don't know what the constellation of mutations are actually going to be. We have to be prepared that there's going to be a diminution in protection.
Fauci said it could take 2 weeks or more to gain insight into how easily the variant spreads from person to person, how severe it is, and whether it can bypass the protections provided by vaccines. President Joe Biden on Wednesday repeated that the new variant is a cause for concern, but not a cause for panic. Biden said earlier in the week the country would not go back into lockdowns and promised to lay out his strategy on Thursday for combating the pandemic over the winter.
Also recording its first cases of the Omicron variant is South Korea. The country's disease control agency says the variant was detected in a fully vaccinated couple who arrived last week from Nigeria. Two of their family members and a friend later tested positive as well. This development comes as officials report a new daily record of 5,266 fresh infections. Authorities have now halted quarantine exemptions for fully vaccinated inbound travelers for 2 weeks. Meanwhile, in the Middle East, the Omicron variant was discovered in Saudi Arabia in an individual who came from a North African country. The United Arab Emirates also detected its first Omicron case. The patient is a fully vaccinated woman who traveled in Africa. The woman and her close contacts are now in isolation. More countries are tightening border controls to keep the Omicron variant at bay. But for the United Nations, blanket travel bans could do more harm than good. More in this report.
Many countries, including the United States, France and Japan, are putting in place tougher border controls and rules for air travelers to guard against the new coronavirus Omicron variant. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says all air travelers entering the country, including American citizens and foreign nationals, will have to show a negative COVID test performed within 1 day of departure. The World Health Organization said at least 56 countries were reportedly implementing travel measures as of November 28th. But the UN Health Agency is warning that, quote, blanket travel bans will not prevent the international spread, and they place a heavy burden on lives and livelihoods. So far, at least 24 countries may have reported cases of the variant, but some of the early indications were most cases were mild, with none severe, according to a WHO official.
Hope for the best, prepare for the worst.
That's what European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen told a news conference.
Vaccinate, boost.
She also emphasized the role of vaccines and urged EU member states to step up inoculation campaigns. Britain and the United States have also expanded their booster programs in response to the new variant. In South Africa, in the region where the variant was first reported a week ago, the National Institute for Communicable Diseases flagged a large number of COVID-19 admissions among infants aged under 2 as an area of concern. But an expert at the institute cautioned against linking that with Omicron just yet.
La décision est donc adoptée.
Meanwhile, the WHO agreed on Wednesday to launch negotiations on an international pact to prevent and control future pandemics. The agreement is hoping to cover issues from data sharing and genome sequencing of emerging viruses to equitable distribution of vaccines and drugs derived from research.
Philippine authorities monitoring dozens of Filipinos who returned from red list countries. The government was able to track down 64 individuals who arrived in the country prior to the imposition of border controls. They are all undergoing mandatory 14-day quarantine. Three of them are Filipino workers who returned from South Africa, the first country which reported the Omicron variant.
Based on reports, the three are fully vaccinated. They do not have any signs and symptoms. No results yet from the RT-PCR. We are still waiting and we are still monitoring. We are trying to coordinate also with the Bureau of Quarantine. And accordingly, Bureau of Quarantine already said that when they released the three individuals, that they were cleared by the Bureau of Quarantine. So extra measures are being done in Negros, wherein they were again isolated by the local government.
Health Undersecretary Vergere also says there's now a quicker turnaround time for genome sequencing, which is used to detect COVID variants.
We can already do immediate processing of this sequencing, and we can immediately issue out the results within 24 to 34 hours for about 50 samples. We have also our subnational laboratories and our satellite genome centers in Visayas and Mindanao and the other parts of the country, wherein we are already building their capacity, and by the start of January, they will start implementation of it.
Good news from Moderna. The company's president says they could have a COVID-19 booster shot targeting the Omicron variant, tested and ready to be filed for U.S. authorization as soon as March next year. Moderna is currently testing whether fully vaccinated recipients of its vaccine are protected against Omicron, as well as those who received smaller doses for their booster shots. The European Union-wide rollout of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine for kids aged 5 to 11 will begin a week earlier than planned. That's according to Germany's health minister, who cited the threat of the Omicron variant for the new schedule. Recorded infections among school-aged children in Germany have surged over the last few weeks. The country is currently battling a fourth wave of infections. The Philippines' pandemic task force has extended the national vaccination drive until Friday, December 3rd. Some local government units called for the extension to meet their respective inoculation targets. Latest data show 7.6 million individuals were inoculated from November 29 to December 1st. That's short of the 9 million target for the vaccination campaign. Still, the DOH says it is happy with the results and the extension of the program.
This is more than two times the daily vaccination rate. Hindi na tayo mag-a-adjust. We will just get the final figures for the 3 days. Tapos yung extension parang bonus na lang yun. We should strive very hard. Kasi meron mga 21 million pa rin hindi nababakunahan all over the Philippines.
Schools in Metro Manila are set to join the pilot testing of limited face-to-face classes next week. Let's get more details now from our very own Ara Perez. Ara, go ahead.
KC 28 schools in NCR will reopen their campuses on Monday with the start of pilot face-to-face classes in the region, according to DepEd. All 16 cities in Metro Manila have participating schools, while the municipality of Pateros will not yet join the pilot run. Pomembo Elementary School, Makati, held a dry run this morning. 72 kinder to grade 3 students will physically go to class on Monday, and they will go through health protocols. Makati LGU's Jeepney Maki will fetch and pick up students, while others will walk with their parent or guardian. Inside classrooms, there are no plastic barriers, but there are UV light and air purifier that disinfect rooms during, after, and before classes. Electric fans are being used instead of aircon. Windows are opened for better ventilation. Holding and isolation areas and clinic are in place in case of symptoms among students and personnel, while medical teams of the school and LGU are on standby. Students will stay in school for a maximum of 3 hours, Monday to Friday. These 28 schools in NCR are included in the 177 additional schools in the pilot run of face-to-face classes. Casey.
Thanks a lot. Ara Perez there joining us on the line. Moving on. The Philippine Senate approves on final reading government's 5 trillion peso national budget for 2022. 22 senators voted to pass the measure, a big chunk of which goes to the social and health sectors. The Philippine National Police and the Department of National Defense, as well as the Election Commission, will also receive significant budget allocations. Senator Ronald De La Rosa made a last-ditch effort to increase the budget of the National Task Force to End Local Armed Conflict, or NTF-LCAC. The Senate panel had slashed the agency's budget from $28 billion to just $4 billion, but it has now been raised to $10 billion. The proposed budget will now go through the bicameral conference committee. Lawmakers are looking to finalize the bill in the second or third week of December before it's sent to President Duterte for his approval. Philippine authorities confirmed the death of a jailed former policeman who had been convicted for killing a woman and her son last December. Janelle Nuesca reportedly died on November 30th, but the Bureau of Corrections only reported it on Wednesday. It did not specify the cause of his death. The surviving son of the victim, however, wants confirmation that Nuesca is in fact dead.
Hindi po ako naniniwala. Kahit po sabihin na nga, may picture daw po, meron na pong nababalita na po sa TV.
Mm-hmm.
And, ang reaction ko po talaga, hindi po rin po ako, ay po si Papa, hindi rin po kasi naniniwala. Pwede naman po kasing nagpipigay ang death certificate, tsaka ano, o kaya palabasin na iba yung ano, palabasin na siya yung bangkay, pero yung iba yung ibang bangkay. Parang ganun po, police po siya. Mga maraming paraan para ano, mga makalaya siya, ganun.
Nuesca shot and killed his victims in Tarlac province as his daughter looked on. The shooting followed a heated argument over the use of a homemade cannon. Video of the incident went viral. An update on the weather now. State Weather Bureau Pag-asa says Typhoon Niato is no longer expected to enter the Philippine area of responsibility. Pag-asa forecaster Chris Perez now joins us for more details. Chris, over to you.
Yes, good afternoon. Yes, we are not expecting Typhoon Niato to enter the Philippine air responsibility anymore. Hence, we have issued the final tropical cyclone advisory regarding this weather disturbance at 11 a.m. today. However, the trough of this particular weather disturbance is expected to bring moderate with at times heavy rains over the eastern Visayas, Masbate, including Tikau Island, Sorsogon, Dinagat Island, and Surigao del Norte, including Siargao and Bucas Grande Island. Residents of these areas are advised to be alert against possible flash floods and landslides and to continue monitoring localized thunderstorm and rainfall advisory to be issued by the PAGASA Regional Services Division in Visayas and Mindanao. And so far for Metro Manila weather, we are expecting generally fair weather conditions apart from some isolated light rains due to the amihan. That's the latest here at PAGASA Weather Forecasting Center. I'm Chris Perez reporting for ANC.
Thanks a lot, Chris, to you and the rest of the team. Thanks for all that you do. Take care. We're going to take another break now. Still ahead, a 15-year-old suspect in the shooting at a high school in Michigan faces murder charges. Details when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Back at the World News, a teenage suspect in this year's deadliest school shooting in the U.S. has been charged with four counts of first-degree murder. Prosecutors also charged the 15-year-old with terrorism, assault with intent to murder, and possession of a firearm. He's being charged as an adult. The suspect opened fire at a high school in Michigan on Tuesday, killing four students and leaving seven others wounded. One victim remains in critical condition. In business, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development warns the Omicron variant is threatening the global economic recovery from the pandemic. The group slashed its 2021 growth, make that global growth forecast to 5.6%. That's slightly lower than its earlier estimate of 5.7% amid new developments on the COVID-19 front. But it retained its 4.5% forecast for 2022. The OECD now appeals for a swifter vaccination rollout, saying areas with low vaccination rates could create breeding grounds for deadlier virus mutations.
The global recovery continues to progress. GDP in most countries is now close to the pre-pandemic path. Massive fiscal and monetary policy support to households and firms from the outset of the crisis, the relatively rapid development of vaccines, the accelerating digital transformation in the wake of the pandemic have all helped get us into this position. But the growth momentum is slowing, and disparities in the recovery remain. We must continue to be vigilant in responding to any new infection outbreaks which can undermine the recovery both globally and regionally.
Aside from vaccine inequity, the OECD says inflation also remains a great risk to the global economic recovery from the pandemic. It also raised concerns about the rising trend in COVID-19 debt in governments around the world.
20 countries have spent $10 trillion supporting people and their economies since the beginning of the pandemic. It would only take $50 billion to ensure vaccination worldwide. The COVID crisis has increased debt levels, and as I've mentioned before, this was appropriate in the crisis. So the COVID debt is not the concern in itself, but rather the rising trend in debt over decades And as the recovery progresses, the issue now is what are governments doing with this money?
The Omicron variant also on top of mind during the annual forum of joint foreign business chambers here in the Philippines. And as Warren de Guzman tells us, while stakeholders have different takes on how it will affect recovery, they all agree the Philippines is in need of more foreign direct investments to help the economy bounce back.
The joint foreign chambers opened their annual Arangkada Forum Wednesday, a venue which they use to hold discussions on what courses of actions they might recommend to the Philippine government to improve the economy. Right from the get-go, they expressed concern about the new Omicron COVID-19 variant, especially with the difficult circumstances created by the nearly two-year-old pandemic.
While the Philippines is not the only Asian country in this situation, its lockdown was longer than most. Should we see effective national leadership, good economic management, continuity of sound policies from one administration to the next, we expect recovery and growth will come. But recovery alone is just the old normal. We think there must be a better normal to attract substantial foreign investment and trade to really boost the economy. As you will hear it said repeatedly, this country has amazing potential, amazing people, amazing possibilities, but for a long time it has fallen short of realizing them.
International management consultant McKinsey & Company says Omicron and other new variants could push the Philippine economic recovery back to pre-COVID levels as far back as 2023.
We could go back from a GDP perspective to pre-COVID levels by the third quarter of next year. And if the virus and the new variants then take more longer hold, that could extend to probably the first quarter of 2023.
Philippine Central Bank Governor Benjamin Jokno and Representative Joy Salceda, Chairman of the House of Representatives Committee on Ways and Means, say there is reason to be optimistic.
People have been very negative about our very high mobility restrictions, but it seems now we've been able to reduce it. And at the same time, care of our DOF and our NPF, we've been able to accumulate already 150 million in vaccines.
The sustained implementation of targeted fiscal initiatives, as well as the acceleration of the vaccination program, should help boost market confidence and consequently economic recovery.
Salceda and Jokno have also been proponents of opening up the Philippine economy to more foreign direct investments. And Salceda says progress is being made in legislation, including the amendment to the Public Services Act, which should allow more foreign dollars to flow into the all-important telecommunications sector. That sector has been plagued with complaints of poor service amid a massive pandemic-fueled spike in data usage. Meanwhile, one of the framers of the 1986 Constitution, alongside another well-respected economist, said more foreign direct investment in Philippine creative industries could help Filipino artists ascend to the heights of Korean pop sensation BTS.
It's been the way the Korean government has been so focused. You know, they organize talent camps, they train thousands of people, etc., etc., so that they're able to compete in the global market.
I think, though, that we can't realize the potential, really, of the creative industries unless we remove the foreign ownership restrictions in mass media and advertising. Or else what will happen, as you ABS-CBN got shut down, supposedly for violating, the 100% foreign ownership rules in the, you know, ADR, and also Gabby Lopez being an American citizen. And Bernie mentioned BTS. BTS is foreign capital behind their management company. You know, they accept foreign capital.
The Joint Foreign Chambers will be presenting its recommendations to the new administration after the elections in 2022. With the polls fast approaching, it will be hard for Congress to get any work done on these reforms. Warren de Guzman, ABS-CBN News.
And before we go, the Philippine House of Representatives unanimously approves the National Museum of Filipino Women Act on third and final reading. The bill seeks to put in place an institution that will display and preserve objects, recorded accounts, memorabilia, and other materials on the heroism and contribution of Filipino women. It'll also showcase the active involvement of women in the economic, social, political, and cultural life of this nation. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Playback this newscast to an ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.